Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Gentlemen.
Hello.
Sorry, Spain calling.
Hello.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
Spain to JB. Spain to JB, yes. Very well, thanks. It's hot.
Very nice. So, it's all over, boys. That's it. Domestic rugby's over.
If you're referring to Pro 12 and the Aviva, you're correct. There's still another 4 or 5 weeks of top 14 action to go. As well as, obviously, the Super Rugby.
Meat grinder.
Meat grinder, absolutely.
And Tim, you did the Premiership final yesterday and then you flew immediately over to Spain.
Yeah, I was... I wasn't working on the telly, but I was working on the BT Sports stage just outside in the West car park, where it was amazing, beautiful hot weather, the thousands of fans and loads of entertainment, plenty of which I can tell you about on the pod. Believe me, it's fun.
Superb. Right, boys, let's get into it. Hands in, pod on three. 1, 2, 3.
Pod.
Hello and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. The podcast about rugby doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I am, of course, JB, sat next to Phil.
Hi, JB.
And from a remote location in most secret Spain, it's Tim.
Hello, JB.
Oh.
Hello, Phil.
Hi, Tim.
We've got Pro 12, we've got Aviva, and also I am going to solve the riddle of all fly halves.
I'm looking forward to this,
wow.
JB.
Oh yeah, I've got it all queued up, Tim. You're going to love it.
Oh, amazing.
Well, where do you want to start, Jay?
Well, I'll tell you what, before you start anywhere, can I just remind people we're on Acast, we're on iTunes, and we love the reviews that are being left on iTunes. I've got a couple of great ones.
Oh, please, fire away.
Edmondo says, and the title of his review is Read Me Now, Believe Me Later.
What a great guy.
Edmondo says, enthusiastic and insightful chaps who add colour and cheer to the weekend's rugby. Insights as heavyweight as Thomas Francis.
Well, that's me covered. What's he got to say about you two?
And comments as cutting as an Andy Goode comeback.
Oh, wowzer.
I know, it's good. And O98 says, essential for any rugby fan, the blend of Tim's tap for regional British accents, in brackets, Jonathan Spratt, makes me laugh every time. Forward! Phil's Borg-like stat efficiency and JB's eccentricity, in brackets, e.g. the game of Springbok or Nazi war criminal. He says it's reminiscent of a Reed Smith Carter 8-9-10 axis.
Oh,
beautiful.
That's outstanding. Thank you very much. Outstanding.
Leave your reviews on iTunes. Find us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, where we've been very, very busy the last few days.
Very busy indeed, Tim.
Yeah, thanks to Mr. Eddie Jones.
Yeah, all I did was post a little picture of Eddie Jones' post-match comments after the England-Wales game, and Hugo Monier, Will Carling, Jonathan Davies, and about 500 other people all took to Twitter to retweet it. So nice.
That's amazing. That's over 10% of the people that follow us actually retweeted us.
Incredible stuff.
So I suppose we should start off with the Premiership final, because you were actually there, Tim.
I was. Well, firstly, I want to hear just briefly then, Bryn Williams, he's been on the podcast before. He's going to be married soon, and it was his stag do over the weekend.
No, it wasn't. He was married over the weekend.
Oh, of course, it was his wedding. It was his stag do recently. So any stories from the wedding? Did you impale yourself on any trees this time?
No, I did not impale myself on any trees this time around. But my friend Steve almost got impaled by a stiletto, and that was hilarious.
That was interesting. There were a couple of fights, same as any standard wedding. Nothing major. A couple of fights, few arguments. But overall, the day was absolutely brilliant. Well looked after, well watered, well fed, and genuinely some of the best speeches I've heard at a wedding.
Yeah, I was starting to well up. Hay fever.
Yeah, it must have been hay fever, definitely. High pollen count.
Yeah, Premiership final. No one's surprised at the result.
Nope.
And it just continues the trend for Saracens dominating and rounds off a pretty unbelievable season for them. I really was glad that Exeter had that comeback in the second half, because I was really would have been a bit of a downer had it been total one-way traffic.
Yeah, Tim, from your perspective outside the ground, and outside the ground is probably one of the best ways to get perspective on this. Which were the best set of fans, the Saracens set or the Exeter, or was it kind of even?
I'd say in terms of the biggest set of fans were Exeter, comfortably.
Yeah.
Despite the fact they apparently didn't sell out their allocation.
Is that right?
Apparently so, because Tony Rowe, the Exeter chairman, took the decision not to sell any tickets online.
What?
Bearing in mind there's only a week turnaround, that was probably a bit of an own goal, but apparently it was because they were doing a marketing tactic where players were handing out cups of tea and cake to people queuing up at the ground, but that was quite a difficult way. But there's plenty of Exeter fans managed to make their way there in spite of that, and they were in full voice and in massive number as well. So they were all really good-natured, well-humoured. Just a credit, just rugby fans are brilliant.
Yeah,
rugby players are amazing as well. The after-game stuff.
I ran into a bunch of Exeter fans at Bath Exeter about 3 years ago now, and they were absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Well, in terms of singing, they've all got... Both sets of fans have got really good songs. Like, you know, you mentioned Bath there. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things I wish they'd... I love Bath, and I love going to the Wreck, but I wish they'd have a little bit more than Bath, Bath, Bath.
No! Why would you want any more than that?
Saracens fans have got...
Don't like that. It's too football-y.
I like that.
I always like the Tom Hawk chop. Now, has anyone managed to work out the actual relationship between Native American Indians and Cornwall yet?
It's Devon. Yeah, there's much stronger links.
No one?
No. Not at all. The Middle East and
Saracens
and North London.
true. Yeah, that's a good point actually, because they were on the other side, the Saracens. They should be called Crusaders.
Yeah.
Oh well. So the game itself. I actually thought, as good as the Saracens were, I thought Exeter were terrible. To be fair.
First.
Oh
half.
My word! I've never seen. Slade have such a bad game.
Yeah, Slade will not be happy with that performance at all. His only kind of real positive contribution was the break and the offload for the Jack Noel try. But besides that, he had two or three knock-ons, two or three missed tackles, one of which led to the Chris yep. Wiles try.
Dropped
high balls, kicking straight into touch, and just generally looked out of sorts.
It's amazing, isn't it? Because he's one of these players that is... when you watch him, he always rises to the next challenge. So you put him in the team, he looked great. Put him in the England team, looks great. Put him in a big game, looks great. It's almost like he's just reached a point where the occasion was actually too big for him.
I think it was a one-off.
I hope so.
I've never seen him play that badly before, and hopefully we won't again.
But I think first half, Exeter got it completely wrong. Like they just kicked the ball to Alex Good and didn't chase the kick like Saracens kick chase.
That's a very good point, Tim, because it almost felt, particularly for the first 20 minutes, like both teams were trying to play the same tactic. They were both trying to kick and chase, but the Saracens, particularly the Saracens' chase, was so much more accomplished. The number of times that Wigglesworth put a box kick up, and either Ashton or Wiles took man and ball.
Oh, it's perfect timing.
It was absolutely perfect timing, and it was almost better because they possibly could have put an extra yard of pace on it and competed for the ball, but they would have risked either a knock on or taking the man in the air. They just slowed themselves down slightly, and as soon as the Exeter defender took the ball, they just absolutely smashed them. It was masterful.
Yeah, I think Ashton did it like two or three times.
Yeah.
Will Chudley looks great when he's sniping around the side and adding tempo and getting the ball in Steenson's hand. He looks terrible when he's slowing it down, doing box kicks, Wigglesworth-esque. That I don't know what they were playing at with their game plan, but it backfired.
But Wigglesworth is the best at that. I mean, he really is. His kicking is so precise.
Yeah, it really is.
But Chudley had a great second half, and when they upped the tempo, got the driving maul going, I mean, it was a different team. So I think Rob Baxter, as he always is, was very measured and full of praise and not getting too caught up in the emotions of it all. But I think he'll look back at that game tape in a few weeks' time and realise what a missed opportunity it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the second half, when they really came back into it, I mean, I think the way you beat Saracens is continual quick phases, playing the ball in the sort of manner that you see with Wasps, and the breakdown takes about 2-3 seconds. They did start to do that, but on the other hand, when they were moving it wide, I just felt like the Saracens' line speed is so quick that you've kind of got like a little channel of about 20 yards to do something, and then after that, you're absolutely done.
Yeah.
Just one thing, guys. I thought second half, I couldn't have loved any other player on the pitch more than Gareth Steenson. The body language, the way he led that team, just it was amazing to watch him. The way he was, did you see him G'ing up the crowd?
Yeah. Yeah, when they had the they got a line out, they got a penalty and they kicked for the corner for a driving maul. It was after they'd already scored one and they were going for another. Yeah. It was brilliant.
He did it a few times like that. It was just really getting the crowd going, and I loved it. I love the guy.
The guy's class. And if you look at some of the other fly half performances from the weekend, you can see exactly why it's important to have a very cool operator there, such as Gareth Steenson.
Yes, definitely. Or equally Owen Farrell.
Oh, absolutely.
Because Owen Farrell was superb.
Can we finally call him the best fly half in Europe now?
Probably. It would be very interesting, actually, if there was a Lions test team picked tomorrow. I think for a lot of the seasons, it probably would have still been Sexton, but I think Farrell now is...
Farrell for me.
Yeah. I mean, his all-round game, his defence has always been superb. He's now got that intelligence to and decision-making to know when to pass, when to kick, when to have a little go himself. That little grubber cross kick under pressure for the Duncan Taylor try was absolutely brilliant.
And I'll tell you the other thing as well. In that Saracen system, he knows exactly what he's doing, exactly what he's going to do next.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just makes amazing decisions.
Yes. Talking about players playing well as well, I thought Jack Noel was exceptional in a losing side.
Well said.
He put in such a big shift, did so much work. He was covering everywhere, and defensively covering everywhere. Offensively, he was making yards all over the park.
Whoops.
Standard. And his finish for the try was brilliant because he got man and ball and powered through Goud, who was man of the match and probably deserved man of the match, and then Billy to crash over, which is no mean feat.
Yeah, I thought he was exceptional. It was a little bit worrying that he's probably their main ball carrier, though.
It was. I think they lost Armand in the second half, and obviously they were missing Waldrum, who normally does a tremendous amount of work. But he did kind of make up the difference, but not completely.
Do you know what I want to do?
Yes, please.
I want to talk about, because I think when you've had the season that the Saracens have done, the first double, European domestic double, that an English team has done...
Since Wasps.
Since 2004.
Mm.
And bearing in mind how much the game has changed and how everyone talks about it being more attritional, more difficult, to do that, and they've peaked at that final. I just think... We need to just sort of show a bit of doff our cap to the whole Saracens organisation. There's a couple of things I just want to mention, and that is just that I was just looking around on some of the Saracens players' Twitter accounts earlier, and George Cruz's Twitter account, I mean, the tweets themselves and stuff were fun, but I think it said everything. The picture that he's got is his background on Twitter, and I'd urge everyone to go and have a look at it, George Cruz on Twitter. It's just all of the Saracens boys in fancy dress, all of them. I was looking around all the faces. There wasn't really anyone missing. All of them on a big old bender. And there's been pictures tweeted around the rugby world and stuff of all the Saracens boys in a bar on Sunday, absolutely hammered. And I just think... And they go jumping out of planes and stuff as we talk about. Jacques Berger. I spent some time with him on backstage.
Did you touch him? Did you touch him?
Sport. Oh my god, he did. I was on stage with him. I was interviewing him. It was amazing.
Did he ask about me?
Always, Jack. Always, JB. Anyway, Jacques Berger. He walked on the bus. First thing he said was, "Where's the beers, boys?" And then he was talking about it. And after Lyon, bearing in mind they had a big game against Leicester in the semi-final, after Lyon, he said everyone, all of them, went on a big two-day bender.
2 days?
Wow.
2 days.
2 days.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good God. Well.
And then I'll add to that. I'll just briefly add to it. Will Fraser and Jamie George came in their full kit onto the stage outside Twickenham in the middle of the West car park.
Yeah.
After the game, to come and like say thanks to the fans and stuff. They were out there, still in their kit, wearing socks, sweaty from the game. They were out there on the stage, fans, and Will Fraser had a bottle of beer and just did a massive chug of it, like holding it outstretched arm above his head.
Good lad.
So, dropping it into his gob. He downed the whole thing. Jamie George grabbed the microphone and led the crowd in a rendition of Build Me Up Buttercup.
It is interesting. Like, you know, we talk. I'm only going to do half an hour, 20 minutes now on culture. But, isn't this how it should be? This is exactly. It shouldn't be all about, going home to someone else, to someone else's mum and being a really nice guy and writing stories on your shirts. This is it. This is exactly how a team should be built.
I think there's place for both sides.
Well, I think there's a balance because... Go on, Phil, sorry.
No, I think we're both going to make the same point. There's got to be both sides. What I do think the Lancaster regime appeared to have got wrong, because that's where you're going with this, Jay...
Eventually.
...is he was trying to use culture as the foundation for building the team, whereas Saracens have got the defensive pattern, the way of playing, the tactics, the hand, like all of the skill level as the basis... And then on top of that, they've built it up through this brilliant like team bonding and team culture.
Yeah, it's, so it's the last part, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not letting the culture drive the performance. It's the performance driving the culture, if that makes sense.
It does.
I'll add to that from Philippa, mate. Jamie George said that, and he was saying this on the stage. I was interviewing him. He was saying this to all the fans. He said that one of the things they did on Thursday as a team is they sat down and they all wrote down a little note of why this game's important to them and who they're doing it for.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I know you hate it, but I'm just saying there's a balance and there's a place for stuff like this. And Jamie George said it was really powerful reading all the notes from his teammates.
Oh, no. I don't like this. I don't like this at all.
All right. Well, get it back onto another thing. Did you see, like, Will Fraser came on stage and chugged a beer, but did you see what he did at the full-time whistle?
Yes.
Did he chug two beers?
No, he ran over to his brother, Henry, who was in the crowd, at the front of the crowd, and gave him a big hug.
Oh, right, nice.
Yeah.
Henry, who's paralysed from the neck down, and it was just a beautiful moment. I really liked it. I just, the more I get to know Saracens and the people at Saracens, whether they're coaches, players, whatever... the more I just think it's a special, special place.
Yeah, yeah, agreed with that. They've really been building something very, very nicely now for a few seasons.
Yeah, and one thing to note as well, partway through the season, so they went unbeaten until mid-January when they lost to Harlequins, and then after that they lost Paul Gustard, instrumental for the defence coach. They lost, I think it was 9 or 10 players for 7 weeks in between February and April, because of the Six Nations, and a lot of teams that would have really affected. I mean, Harlequins were going great guns before they lost a load of players to the internationals, then after that they looked all at sixes and sevens, but Saracens settled and got back into their rhythm, and then, like you mentioned before, Jay, they built towards those two finals and the semi-finals. It's really, really impressive.
I mean, you could make an argument that they are the best non-international team in the world, and I think they probably are. Despite what anyone who watches Super Rugby might say, I think that this Saracens team, the real deal.
Oh, I'd love to see them against, say, the Chiefs or the Crusaders, where they're flinging the ball about and just hitting a brick wall phase after phase after phase, and then Saracens turn it over and go 40 yards and score.
Yeah, I'd absolutely love to see that. I'd love to see if... well, actually, we have kind of seen a New Zealand-style team in Leicester play them, and it wasn't particularly good. But they are not the best exponent of that type of game.
No, not by a long shot.
I was having a little natter with my brother, but because he's out on holiday with us here in Spain. I tried to get him a podcast, but he's not
having any of it, though.
He's not where he says, "Oh, I've got a," but he's got to bath the baby and get ready. Anyway, he's not here. But I had a chat with him, and he was saying that Saracens, because I know that you sometimes give him a bit of stick, JB, and I've been I've been full of praise.
Have I ever given Saracens stick?
Yes, in this sense.
Go on.
In the I've been saying recently, and you look at that starting 15. Five of the starting 15 that won the Premiership final were academy graduates. Mm-hmm. Three of them were signed from the Championship. So that's more than half your team that are either out your academy or not even play or playing lower than the Premiership. And so I think they punch above their weight in that sense. And you quite often bring up the salary cap.
No, I think you bring up the salary cap.
But
I would say, look, that clearly was a case to answer at the start of the season or start of last season regarding their salary cap situation. I think in domestic competition, it's far more serious than it is in the European competition, because European competition is pretty much an open playing field. But you know, I'm not going to criticise them for that this weekend, because what they did isn't about the salary cap. I mean, I think they could have spent underneath the salary cap and still come up with exactly the same result, simply for the fact that they're a damn good team. And, you know, it isn't about buying stars. They create their own stars.
Yeah. Okay, so what I was going to say was, I was chatting to my brother, he sort of, you know, knows the kind of inner workings of it. He said that their aim is to have 30 to 40% of their whole squad academy graduates. That's what they're working towards.
Mm-hmm.
And that he said that their academy is amazing because in all the years, it's all about development and skill development. In the final year of the academy, it is only about winning.
Yes, as it should be.
And that's different from most academies, where there's this kind of results and skill development kind of, they go, don't give a shit about final year of academies. They go, don't give a shit about, oh sorry, I just swore, don't give a damn. I've had a few gin and tonics, boys. Don't give a damn about the skill stuff. It's all about winning. And that's why I think you're seeing these guys coming ready made for professional rugby straight out of the academy.
But I'll tell you a quick interesting story, not about rugby, but I was talking to one of the not even youth team coaches below that, like the minis coaches for Manchester United. And there, they don't even let them wear the United kit until they get to a certain age. So all of their minis aren't allowed to wear any kit with United badge, so they all have to wear international kits. So when you go down to their training centre, they've got all the international kits that are made by Adidas. So Germany will play such and such.
Argentina.
And such. Yes, exactly right. And to make it even worse, well, not worse, but to add a little bit more context to it, when they need to want something like a goalkeeper, they needed a goalkeeper a few weeks ago for like the under 12s. They bought in 50 goalkeepers.
Wow.
So yeah, maybe Saracens should look at that sort of model.
Wowzers.
Hmm.
So I just, the more I sort of learn about them, salary caps and stuff in the past, whatever, but I think culturally, coaching wise, and in terms of where they're going, they're so switched on, and they're doing an amazing job for English rugby, I think.
Yeah, and I actually think that they are the main beneficiaries of the salary cap. Not because they ignored it and everyone else played by the rules, but more to the point that when, you know, as I always say, when you maximise your cap on player salaries, well, where else can you go? And they've spent their money wisely on things like, you know, the accountants at KPMG who analyse the games for them, systems, they've got a new pitch, they've got all, you know, they've done all the right things in terms of infrastructure too. And I think most clubs are going to go down that route now. Tim, you there? Oh no, we've lost Tim.
Uh-oh.
Hello, Tim.
Timmy, yes.
Ah, okay, brilliant. Tim, you're sounding nice and sharp, which makes me think it's time to mention one of our sponsors. What do you think, mate?
What a segue, JB. Incredible.
Oh, stop it, mate. Stop it.
I think some people are quite often, particularly online and on social media, are quite afraid to put pictures of their shaft up.
Oh, 100%.
it's often frowned upon or shied away from, but we encourage people to send pictures of their shaft, right, JB?
100%. 100%.
Did you see the picture we've been sent from a friend of the pod this week who showed us his shaft?
Hashtag show us your shaft.
Yes.
The person who inscribed egg onto his cornerstone razor.
Yes, that's exactly it. EGG is their engraving.
Beautiful.
Friend of the pod who shall thus far remain nameless. But that got me thinking, maybe we could have like kind of rugby-themed acronyms on there. So someone could do SBW for...
Sonny Bill Williams, of course.
Or JPR. JPR Williams, or RFU, or WR, something like that. I'm sure there's lots of...
LT or LTBP?
LGBT?
Let the boys play.
LTBP, let the boys play.
Yeah, I've always wanted to say that, but it does sound a little bit too close to LGBT. Not there's anything wrong with that, but, you know, when I say something... profound, and then I go LGBT at the end of it. it's not gonna have that pop, is it? So do you fancy telling people what Cornerstone actually do?
Yes. So this is all a great example. You can get hold of your precision engineered, award winning, better than Wilkinson Sword and Gillette fact at the GQ Awards recently. Cornerstone razor, you can get your engraved shaft, have the best shave of your life, and with Egg Chasers, because we've sorted out a deal for you, you can get £10 off your very first order with Cornerstone, which means it's going to be pennies to give it a try and see why so many people are going over to Cornerstone razors. You just go to cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, and get your £10 discount there, or by using Egg10 at checkout. You get your £10 discount, which means you can give it a go. And then when you get hold of that amazing shaft in your hand that you've had engraved, send us a picture of your shaft. Hashtag show us your shaft. And we'll retweet our favourite shafts on our Twitter account.
Perfect.
Such a pro, Tim. Such a pro. Anyway, the Pro 12 final. where do you want to go with this one?
Firstly, I think it's amazing that, bearing in mind we're coming to the end of a weekend of rugby, we're only getting into the Pro 12 final now. We've still got England-Wales to talk about and stuff. It's brilliant.
Well, I'm happy to talk about England-Wales. Just remember this. I said at the start of the week, last week, it was a pointless game. I meant it was a pointless game until what happened. And now it's a very relevant game.
Yes, I would agree with that. First, before we do get into that, Leinster Connacht. Now, yeah. I got this wrong. I thought that, and I said last week, I expected Leinster to win based on their kind of experience of this situation. They've got a lot of players with huge experience. Mm. Multiple players who've won multiple Heineken Cups, in fact, and multiple Six Nations. But they were summarily outplayed for 80 minutes.
It's incredible, actually.
It was, and it's... It's probably the highest compliment you can pay Connacht to say there was a little bit of Saracens about them.
Well, and one of the tries was identical.
Yeah.
Absolutely identical. I thought the
Grubber kick through.
Yeah, people are going to be raving about Pat Lam's expansive Kiwi play, and then they're going to be talking about boring Saracens, and it's the same try.
But the reason I say it was a little bit Saracens about it was because they gave Leinster more territory, more possession. Mm-hmm. They made more than 50 more tackles than Leinster, and Leinster got virtually nowhere. Leinster only made 2 line breaks, despite beating at the door 195 times.
Well, actually, Leinster had made one more tackle, I think, by the time that they... Who was it they held up? They held up the hooker.
Yes.
So at that point, the tackle count was almost identical.
Right, and so it came back.
Yeah, so it came in late, probably as Leinster realised that they were in a bit of hot water. This game went exactly as I expected. I expected Leinster to win.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I expected Leinster to win.
So this didn't go exactly as you expected?
No, it went exactly as I expected. Because I expected Leinster to win, I picked Connacht to win. Because every game this year, I've expected someone else to win other than Connacht. And the only time they haven't won is when we expected them to win against Zebre.
Yeah.
So that's the way that I picked it. And thankfully, I was right. But God knows how, I mean, I know how they win it. They played really good rugby. But when you watch them, do you know when they do the little forward interplay things?
Yeah.
If you were a coach now, or if you're watching kids being coached, how many people would say, go forward, put your head down, don't mess around with it? Because that's kind of what you do. And they've sort of tore it all up and done something completely different.
But in order to do that, you've got to have a slightly higher, or a significantly higher than average handling skill set in the forwards, which is obviously something that Pat Lam has worked on. And
yes,
it's paying dividends, because not many teams can do that kind of neat little interplay.
And I guess it makes sense, doesn't it? Because if you are, for instance, if you're a pack, right, and you come in to coach this pack, you can't make them grow. You can't make them faster. You probably can make them a bit stronger. But you can probably upskill them.
Yeah. That's a very good point, actually. It's probably the easiest thing to make big gains in.
Yeah.
Because I bet playing on the west side of Ireland in mostly driving rain and horrendous windy conditions, I imagine that pack was always pretty nuggety and tough, but like in years gone by, but had pretty low base level skills.
Yeah, exactly right.
Oh, that's very interesting.
What do you think, Tim?
I think... I enjoyed a couple of things in particular. I enjoyed the absolute smash by Bundiaki on Sexton.
Yes.
Beautiful moment. I really enjoyed Oltan Dilan just like treating Dave Carney like a ragdoll, just smashing through him. And I really, really enjoyed John Muldoon's passionate post-match chat to the point where he could barely get a word out. He was he'd given that much emotionally and physically. It was... just an amazing story and a fairy tale finish. Loved it.
The player of the day for me had to be Matt Healy. My God, that guy's a superstar.
Yeah, but not good enough for Joe Schmidt. Because Joe Schmidt has picked Dave Carney.
Unbelievable.
Ahead of him. Yeah, and that is quite unbelievable, actually. That Gilroy and Matt Healy.
And McCluskey.
Well, Gilroy and Matt Healy, the top try scorers in the Pro 12, the two of them, neither of them are in the team. McCloskey's another one, who it's another thing I got wrong. I said last week that I expected him to be in the squad and starting, no less, because of the physical threat from the South African centres, and he doesn't even make the plane.
No, it's a very, very strange times now, and they seem to have all the right players, but they're just not picking them.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's very interesting.
And the Nigerian winger, who I can't pronounce his name, so try it for me.
Adeoloki.
He had a tremendous game.
Lokun. Adeoloki.
Is he qualified to play for anyone? Is he English originally?
Nigerian?
Don't know.
He might be qualified to play for Nigeria.
Tim, can you shed any light on this?
None.
Brilliant.
That's what I would say about that.
He is Nigerian-born... according to this, he's been living in Ireland for the past 7 years.
Oh, so he's qualified.
So presumably, for his continued residence, he would be qualified to play for Ireland.
I thought he had a very, very good game.
Yeah, that
well
chip.
Well done, Connor.
One question from that game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Man of the match was AJ McGinty.
Okay.
Have you seen enough to say whether he will be a success at Sale?
Yes, I think I have seen enough.
And would you say he would be a success?
No, I don't think he will be.
What about you, Tim?
I'm on the fence. I think actually everyone thinks, oh, Cipriani, they're losing Cipriani and they're not replacing him with an eccentric ball-playing guy. But actually Cipriani kicked more than any fly half in the Premiership. And first and foremost, what he did was get that big Sale pack in the right parts of the pitch. And then added a little bit of stardust every now and again, as well as having some absolutely shocking kicking performances every now and again as well. So I think he could do all right. I don't think Cipriani for Sale is the all-action, ball-playing, rogue-type player that everyone kind of assumes he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be disparaging or a podcast where we should be nothing but praiseful of the Connacht team. But I do think it's the team rather than the individuals that made the performance.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of worries me about AJ McGinty coming over to Sale, because he's replacing an individual.
But you could argue that actually means Sale Sharks is the right fit, because that's exactly how Sale have done what they've done.
Maybe. Well, let's hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I actually think he could be a good fit, judging by for exactly the reason that Tim has set out. I think there is a little bit of Stardust, but not incredible. But Cipriani hasn't been playing that kind of exciting way since before he went to Australia.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Australia. I don't think.
No.
So,
and it's also interesting to think, where are Connacht going to go next season? They're losing Henshaw, they're losing McGinty. Who's the guy in the packets off?
Rodney RU's going to Rodney RU's Ulster. But Finlay Beatham's been starting at tight end and playing very, very well.
Who is the guy who's absolutely stacked for them? He came on as a sub. He's absolutely enormous.
O'Brien. Sean O'Brien the younger.
I'm not sure if it's Sean O'Brien, but he is. I've got a feeling he might be a front rower, but he is suspiciously enormous. Test him and him. You guys, you're free. You can leave.
AJ, you're okay. We don't need a sample from you, AJ.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens in the off season, but a brilliant way to round off the season.
Indeed.
I'll tell you what I've got a Who Am I Now.
Oh yes, please.
So, JB against Phil, I'm going to give some clues from a Wikipedia page of one rugby player. If you have a guess and get it wrong, you're out till the other person has a guess.
Okay.
Who am I? I'm a rugby union player. I was born in Halifax, Yorkshire.
Oh.
I went to Bradford School.
Okay.
And the University of Durham.
Brian Moore.
It's not Brian Moore. Oh, Phil.
Luther Burrell.
Yeah, mate. Right, JB, over to you.
Luther
Burrell.
I've had two.
Jay's had his guess.
I've had my guess.
Oh, what was it?
Luther Burrell.
It's not Luther Burrell, right? Yes. You're back in then.
Yes.
I've had two professional clubs. I've played for England 38 times.
Ooh.
I toured with the British and Irish Lions, but did not get a cap for them. I have the record for the most consecutive starts for England at fly half.
Come on, Phil. Huh? Come on, Phil. You've got to guess, because I can't guess until you guess.
I'm going to say Rob Andrew. Rob Andrew.
Not Rob Andrew. I'm also, another one of my accolades, the top all-time point scorer in the Premiership.
Charlie Hodgson?
Yes.
Yeah!
What? He's born in the Halifax?
Yeah, he's a Yorkshire boy.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Didn't know that.
And right, the record for the most consecutive starts for England at fly half, Charlie Hodgson.
I would never have guessed.
I guess that was probably between about 2004 and 2007 when Johnny Wilkinson was a body wreck.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I tell you what about Johnny Hodgson. He went on that Lions tour, the tour of hell, down to New Zealand. And I think he was comfortably the best fly half for the midweek teams. He didn't even get a look in.
Hmm.
Well, it would be interesting to know where he would fit in, if he would fit in, if he was in the England squad now, because they've got some riches in a lot of positions. And, I mean, JB, I want to know, what's your initial reaction to being absolutely pumped by England as Wales were?
Oh, well, my initial reaction is, I told you so.
That's your reaction to everything, regardless of whether you told us so or not.
Well, OK, so here's how the game started. It started really, really well. I thought that Wales had done their homework and they'd adjusted their style of play to play like the last 10 minutes of the Six Nations game. And they were and they were very quick getting off the line, like suspiciously quick. And that seemed to have worked. And then they got the try through Nicky Smith and you know, everything felt right in the world. Where we lost it with the collisions. There were no collisions. And I don't know if it's because the Welsh were rusty or they were tired or, as I suspect is more the case, the England broken field runners are just far, far too good. Watson,
Watson, Yard, Joseph, yes. Mike Brown, Jack Clifford.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Luth. Yeah, you just couldn't get near them. Luther Burrell ran very hard, straightened things up. Impressive performance. I don't know if it's an impressive performance or the Welsh were just terrible.
I think, from my perspective, it was a very impressive performance besides the halfbacks, which probably makes it an even more
impressive performance.
Yeah, because the halfbacks, for most of the game, were pretty poor. I thought Ben Youngs looked, his try excluded, he looked lackadaisical, disinterested a lot of the time. Some of his passes were either looped up or down at people's toes.
It was quite an incredible performance when you consider how bad George Ford was.
I thought he came back into it in the last 20, 25 minutes, or what of that period he played. But yeah, for 40, 50 minutes, he didn't look great.
I was devastated.
It could have been a really ugly-looking scoreboard for Wales. Yeah.
Well, I hope everyone realises now why we don't try and play rugby and why Gatland Ball is king. Because it was just so awful to watch. We couldn't keep the ball in contact. We tried to pass it out, go through two hands, change point of contact, do all the things that that teams that play rugby do, and we can't do it. So we're best being physical, kicking the percentages, chasing, doing all the jobs that require no skill, and then only if we need to play. Don't go out with the idea of playing, boys. It's just not going to win.
Just on that point, one of the big problems for Wales was their set piece.
And
no matter how you're going to play, if you can't win your own ball from the set piece, your game plan is irrelevant. Mm. There was a good tweet that said, I can't remember who the second choice hooker, Dacey, was arguing with the referee about whose line out it should have been. And someone tweeted, said, it doesn't matter if you're arguing, you're just kind of arguing over who's going to throw it to Joe Launchbury.
Yeah, the England second row were very, very impressive.
Particularly one moment, you talked about the collisions, Wales didn't win them. Definitely one collision you would have backed is anything involving Jamie Roberts, but the way he got handed off by Courtney Laws was embarrassing for Jamie Roberts.
Was that the one round the side for, was it like the yard try or something, was it?
The yard try, yeah. It looked like the big kid at school. You know, when you're like 13 years of age, and there's one kid who's like just started like all the way through puberty, and then you've got another kid who hasn't started yet. That's how Courtney Laws made Jamie Roberts look like that.
Mate, I tell you what, the All Blacks must be terrified now. Absolutely terrified. It was abysmal. It really was abysmal.
What do you make then of Warren Gatland? Because when he was said, you know, you must be. It was Graham Simmons after the game said, "I wasn't expecting that. You must. What are you? Shocked? Angry? Disappointed?" And Warren Gatland said, "Oh no, reasonably happy with that performance."
Well, here's what I think might have caused this performance. And let's just put aside England were excellent. Okay, so I'm not taking anything away from England. I'm just kind of hoping this might have been the case. That because it is a friendly, and everyone's talking about a friendly, and everyone wants to play the right type of rugby, that maybe they did go out and change their game plan to what has traditionally been very effective for us. And if that's the case, it's easily fixable. We can go back to what we do so well. If it wasn't, it's going to... Oh, I don't even know where to start. but it does highlight something which I tweeted out from my own account, which is how bad must Stuart Lancaster have been at his job
to manage to get his full strength England team to lose to Wales.
Yep.
When now the second England team or second strength England team can beat what is virtually a full strength
Wales team. And win a Grand Slam on your first try.
Yeah. Tim, any highlights of players? Anyone you thought stood out from the England-Wales game?
All lowlights, mate.
Well, I think we should get into this what's become quite a contentious decision, and that's for the Jack Clifford try. So, what an unbelievable turn of gas Jack Clifford's got. Scott Williams didn't get close to him.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad.
I don't know if that's more impressive for Clifford's gas or more worrying that Wales' outside centre couldn't catch him.
I think more impressive for Clifford's gas. He was just looked rapid, but yeah. So, firstly, for me, that was. I mean, there's been some a lot of conjecture about whether that was a try or not.
I think
I'm looking forward to hearing what JB says about Dan Bigger's reaction to it.
Right. Okay. Well, was it a try? I'm going to say if that was Wales, I would have said it was a try. Now, because it's England, I'm going to say no, it might not have been. It might have gone forward before hitting the Welsh player to go back. But, you know, it's such a marginal call. I think you've got to go with the attacking team.
The TMO's words were, it's not a clear and obvious knock-on, which I would actually agree with.
Yeah.
It was very difficult to say whether the ball went down from Dan Cole or marginally forward and then hit the Wales player and then went backwards. And on that, I would always give the benefit of the doubt to the attacking team, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah, exactly right. When I watched it on the replay, I was like, I couldn't overturn this.
Yeah, nothing clear and obvious.
Warren Gatland, talking about it in his post-match chat, said that he said it shouldn't have been a try because irrelevant of whether it went forwards or backwards, the ball was slapped down. Now,
nope, not a law.
Warren Gatland is an international coach, and I was surprised to hear him say that. And he needs to brush up on some basic laws, because Law 12 says, basically, it's only relevant that the knockdown or deliberate knock-on or deliberate slap-down or whatever is only relevant if the ball goes forward.
Yeah.
Because there's loads of examples in games all the time. From a restart, people will try and slap the ball backwards. So Warren Gatland, in the off-season, after this tour, get yourself a law book and sit down and have a little look through again, because clearly you kind of there's some little gaps in your knowledge. Now, there's gaps in my knowledge in the laws, but I'm not an international rugby coach.
That is true.
Not yet, Tim.
Yeah, not yet.
And also, I think that the referee did absolutely everything right. As you said, he referred the issue to the TMO. The TMO said there's nothing clear and obvious. Personally, I think it went backwards. But
I think in real time, I'd have called that forward.
Me too.
In real time. But I think referring it was the right thing to do. Because he referred it, it wasn't clear and obvious. And so the try stands, and that will be that.
That is exactly the reaction I would have encouraged my players to have on the field. Warren Gatland said... So I'll give you the two coaches and what they said about Dan Bigger and his petulance. And Alan Wynne-Jones was one of the people. I think he should know better as well. Anyway, Eddie Jones said, "We have to be careful of that in rugby. I didn't like how Bigger went on. We have to be careful we don't allow it to creep into the game." I thought I couldn't love Eddie Jones anymore, but I did even more a little bit there. And Warren Gatland said, "There's nothing wrong with a player remonstrating at what he thinks is a pretty important decision."
Yeah, there is.
And there's nothing wrong with showing a bit of passion. Yeah. That's what he said about Dan Bigger, what I would describe as petulance.
There's nothing wrong with showing a bit of passion, but once the ref has made his decision, particularly after review with the TMO, there is absolutely nothing that can be done.
Yeah.
So Dan Bigger only makes it worse for himself and the team.
Correct.
It was completely the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, I completely agree. Fly halves have not had a particularly good weekend.
Just before you get onto that, very quickly, have a guess. Wales Rugby Online have got a poll on was Dan Bigger right to argue with the referee or was he out of order? What do you think the percentage was?
What do I think the percentage was? I think Wales Online, I think Dan Bigger probably comes out on top.
Yeah, probably 60% in Dan Bigger's favour.
Thing is...
Pretty much exactly that. 60% of the people reading that Wales Rugby poll and participating in it said that Dan Bigger, 60% say Dan Bigger was right to behave how he did after that decision.
Well, does anyone know actually what Dan Bigger was saying before we all jump on him here?
I think it's almost irrelevant.
I don't think it is, because from what I understand, the referee was informing him that it was a friendly game and it doesn't matter. And he was annoyed because he'd tried really, really hard. And he only tries hard for full-on internationals. So that's what I think happened.
So Ed Gatland confused him and told him this was a full-cap international.
Yes, exactly right, because he didn't want Reece Priestland to play. He actually came on and did very well, to be fair. Well, Tim.
Go on, JB. Tell us about this 10 thing you've got.
Okay, so it's not been a good weekend for playoffs. So I was just wondering if there's anything out there in the market which you could buy as a director of rugby for your fly half. And as it is, we've found something. So we've pulled this up from the internet. Do you want to have a listen?
Oh, please, yeah.
Introducing the fly half pacifier system from JBL. Miss six kicks?
Not a problem.
Shouting at the ref in front of millions?
Don't you worry, little man.
Hammered by Bundiaki?
We can fix that too.
The FPS is the ultimate way to coddle your star playmaker. No longer will tantrums be spelt with a kicking tee. The FPS wraps naughty little starlets safe in media-proof cotton to protect their delicate little feelings from the nasty press. The FPS also incorporates a crowd-cheering function that cocoons your star man with reassuring support, so he wakes up refreshed, confident, and ready for the day ahead. Killing off that feeling of a bad game is now as easy as killing it with your mate Nev. So, if you want no more bruised egos, damaged pride, or tearful changing rooms, you need the JBL Fly Half Pacifier System. Exclusively available from JBL. The FPS system is not suitable for props, second rows, back rows, or real men in general. Some features vary and positive outcomes are not guaranteed. System currently not available to Mike Ford.
There you go, Tim. Does that solve your problems?
Where do I sign? That is outstanding. I mean, that sells itself. Can I buy shares in it?
You must. Oh, well, it's more of a pyramid scheme, I'm guessing, at this point.
So, yeah, you can buy some and then sell them on to some of your fly halves.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. The fly half pacifier system.
Very good. Very good, JB.
Thank you, Phil.
Outstanding.
Now, there is a little bit more business that we need to attend to, because unless you want to carry on talking about England-Wales for a little bit more, I think I'm done with this game forever.
Just a couple of points I wanted to make.
Yeah, go for it.
I think the back row decision going forward is going to be a very interesting one, because I thought of the three starting back rows for England, Tamina Harrison, James Haskell and Jack Clifford.
Harrison was excellent.
Harrison was very good. Harrison can play seven as well. And I think, to me, Haskell was the worst of those three in that game. His offensive carrying was too upright, not aggressive enough.
Yep.
Whereas the other two were better body position, made more yards, better turn of pace, more aggressive and abrasive at the breakdown. Mm. I think that Haskell will struggle to get into that team now.
I agree with that. Now, I'm a huge Haskell fan as a player, a captain, all the rest of his work. I love his work rate.
But DJ.
Not so much that. I would say this, though. His tackling can be relatively weak. And he was still making his tackles, but he wasn't winning the collision. So a lot of Welsh players were getting beyond him. And if they had a bit of nous about them and a bit of rugby skill, they probably could have offloaded. And that's not what you want from a workhorse six or seven.
No, not at all. He should be absolutely smashing everyone.
Yeah, Tamar Harrison did very, very well.
I would actually just say one thing to balance things up, Phil, is you say that running upright is, that is a negative and the others were better in their ball carrying. However, if you want to run into and bounce off of a post protector, Haskell's upright body position.
What a guy.
Yeah, if I'm looking for that specific skill, then Haskell's the man I want.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll consider that before I make my selections known for the Australia tour.
Oh, good. I'm so impressed with Eddie Jones and the tweet that's been retweeted however many hundred times on our Twitter account at Rugby Podcast was some comments of Eddie Jones basically having a pop at the English rugby press when all the journalists were asking him about the kicking of George Ford, and he's effectively gone, hold on, we just scored 5 tries against Wales. How often does that happen? Why is England? This is typical negativity around English rugby, and I love him for saying that.
Yeah,
I don't think he means it, though.
Well, there's two sides. One, the biggest positive and the biggest focal point should be on the 5-1 performance.
Mm-hmm.
In saying that, he is not saying that getting 14% accuracy, 1 out of 7 kicks, is acceptable, but he's just kind of highlighting the priorities. I think he will be having words with Ford.
Oh, 100%.
Because that kind of performance is simply unacceptable, particularly when you're only taking 2 fly halves on your tour.
Yeah.
And I think some of the people are saying that it would make him question that decision, and I would agree. Often you will take 3 fly halves on a tour because it is such a specialist position. So it's an interesting one. It doesn't justify Ford's performance and Ford's performance off the tee specifically, but it puts it into perspective because the focus should be on the positive and all of the positives, including debuts from the likes of Tamana Harrison, right, from the likes of...
Sorry, Phil, I'm going to have to come back at you here. Why should all the focus be on the positives?
Because not all the focus, but the main focus should not be on one lad kicking missing a few kicks.
I don't know.
Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, from a media point of view, I know it feels negative, right? And it's all very well to say, oh, the media are negative, but I guarantee you, when they look back at that video, they're going to say the biggest problem with this game is we missed 14 points. Because those 14 points are very hard to come back. 14 points in a game is a huge margin. And, yeah, they could afford to lose it this time round, but all these coaches talk about a performance rather than an outcome. And I don't think they'll be at all happy with that performance.
I don't disagree with what you said, but we haven't just beaten Wales. We have, England have absolutely pumped Wales. And
yeah. I guess
and the no one's saying we should, you know, George Ford's performance shouldn't be questioned, but the context is England have just pumped Wales and actually are going into Australia full of confidence because they were missing 11 guys, another point Eddie Jones made, missing 11 guys who were involved in the English domestic club finals. So the guys they were missing were highly influential, highly talented. So the primary focus should be, well, what another great step following on from a Grand Slam without 11 players. They've gone and hammered Wales.
Yeah, I think that's how the fans should see it, definitely. That is definitely the fans' point of view. I think for the coaches, though, it's a bit hypocritical to say, don't be focusing on that when that's exactly what they will be focusing on.
Oh, no, they will focus on it, but that is not their principal focus. That is not the one...
So that is their principal concern.
So in training, do you reckon that they'll get those 32 lads in and say, right, everyone else, you can go and have the week off. Ford, you're doing extras this week.
No, but I bet you when they sit down, that'll be their primary concern. It'd be mine.
It is a concern.
That my fly half's missed 14 points. But there again, he's not really my fly half. Farrell is.
Yes.
So maybe not.
Yeah, it's not the primary concern. It is a concern.
If he's playing like that, why not bring in Cipriani? Bigger, faster, probably.
Worst kicking percentage in the Premiership.
Yeah, he can't. But he's over 17%, I think.
Even at his worst time, he was over 17%. Interestingly...
That's true.
Interestingly, I saw a tweet from Cipriani, an Instagram from Cipriani this week.
Was he killing it with Nev?
He was doing some speed work on the track.
Okay.
And he said, his quote, it was him running, he said it was a 50-yard dash in 4.57 seconds.
That's fast.
Which,
if
you extrapolate it down to the 40-yard dash, would make him the fastest ever 40-yard dash by about half a second. So I think he's got a little bit confused. We're talking about 40-yard dash from the NFL Combine, which is the fastest of the fastest.
Wow, so he's half a second faster than Deion Sanders.
Yeah, half a second faster than the fastest ever NFL player.
Fair play, that's fast.
He is killing it.
He is killing it. What? I mean, allegedly, he is supremely fast.
Yes.
I mean, I've heard, like, when he's at Wasps, he was the fastest there.
Yeah, when he was there with Paul Sackey.
Yeah.
fair play. You can knock him as much as you want, but that is fast.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it is.
That is seriously fast.
One, go.
Okay, well, if we're moving away from England Wales, there's one thing that I think is a positive, well, possibly a negative and a positive, but recently you might have been bored by me talking about refereeing decisions and what constitutes a red card.
Uh-oh.
And where are we
going? Where's this going?
Well, I just wanted to actually say, did you see Glenn Jackson, the referee, the way he dealt with Eben Etzebeth and Lou Diega?
I've heard about it. I've not seen it yet.
I've seen it.
I've got it all recorded. I'm going to go upstairs and watch the Jaguars as soon as this is finished.
So,
we'll talk about that in a minute. But Glenn Jackson said, so Eben Etzebeth and Lou Diega, it never really came to blows. It was just handbags. But Glenn Jackson, before we've seen it, it was brilliant. He just said, and bearing in mind, this is what I'm talking about refs having empathy with the game.
Mm.
He's played at high level. And he said, I'll tell you what. He said to his TMO, let's just check it. But it looked to me like just a bit of South African fun.
Wow. Did you get the call right?
Yeah.
Excellent. Oh, 100%.
There wasn't... It was very aggressive shirt grabbing. But there wasn't a single punch thrown. There was arguably a bit of when Etzebeth got on top of him on the floor, a bit of elbow to the face. Oh, it was like forearm.
Ooh, but did Etzebeth win?
Holding him down. Etzebeth got on top.
Yeah.
But I think it was the right call.
Good bit of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, the throw to the ground. You'd have liked it, Jay.
Nice.
Yeah, I think it was. That was the right call. There wasn't no punches thrown. There was grappling for quite a long time. It was about 30 seconds they were going at each other. But not worthy of a yellow card. Shake hands, move on.
Yeah.
Let the boys play.
Exactly that. Let's be brief on this, because we've talked about this sort of thing in the past, but I was so dismayed when I watched Los Jaguares and their two red cards.
No, don't tell me the result. I don't know the result. I know there's two red cards, and I can't wait to see it.
There's
actually, tell me the result. It's a rugby podcast.
Well, Los Jaguares, despite going down at one point to 12 men, did really well and almost could have still won. But Los Jaguares lost. But two red cards for what I would describe as rucking.
Yes.
Wow.
Now, I would go for that. What they're saying was it was shoulder-to-head contact.
Shoulder-to-head. Okay.
Now I think
so. Man in jackal position over ball.
Yeah.
Player coming in and rucking by hitting shoulder at the first part of the player that he sees, which is shoulder head area.
Yeah. For me, I think the second. Well, I think they were both probably penalties. The second one particularly because Herrera went completely off his feet stupidly. But
I agree with that.
But I can't see a red card. I just can't see it. I know me and you have been at odds on some of these calls recently, Tim, but this one I am completely with you. I think it's ludicrous.
Do you know what this is? I've not seen it, but this is just my uninformed, speculative rant. This is what I expect it to be, right? This is bad coaching, right? Because there are ways... Everyone knows that the jackal position is incredibly hard to remove an individual.
Yeah.
So if you look at all the good teams now, they don't let you jackal because they're so close to each other when they go into contact, it's almost they bind on before you've got to deck. They're just not doing the basic things which all the other good teams are doing well.
I would agree with that. They're not the...
I'd say that's almost irrelevant to whether this is a red card or not, though.
Is it that obviously not a red card?
It is that is a weakness in their play, and they're not the most cohesive and coordinated team. So that is a weakness, but that does not justify it being a red card.
I'll put it this way, JB. What your favourite second row at the minute? Lavanini, is it?
Yeah.
What a specimen.
Yeah, what a specimen. And he there's one way to get rid of a guy who's trying to jackal for the ball, and that's to absolutely smash him at a ruck.
Yeah, agreed.
Which is what Lavanini does and gets a red card for it. Jack Berger tweeted, get this, you will be so proud when you see this. Jack Berger tweeted during the Los Jaguares game and said, I can't believe that was a red card. And do you know what he said next?
Go on.
Let the boys play.
Let the boys play. Exactly right. I need to watch
Jack
this.
Jack Berger said, let the boys play.
Wow. Wow. What's Jack up to now? Do we know where he's going to go?
Going to his farm in Namibia.
He's tweeted some pictures of it, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And is that for good now? Or you never? Is he going to be... Well, I'm asking, right? Is he going to be like Jay from Five? Is he going to retire and we'll never see him again?
Or is it going to be like, is it going to be like Lee Ryan from Blue? And we have getting too much of him all the time.
Yes, exactly. Is he Lee Ryan or is he Jay?
I think he's more Jay from Five, is the impression I get. He was saying how his parents are getting older and he's looking forward to getting back to Namibia, and he got the farm ready. And I feel really, really privileged to have spent a little bit of time with him, because I mean, you know what he's like.
Yeah.
What a lovely, lovely bloke. The guy is just a proper gent. Brutal. I described him on the BT Sports stage. I said, before he came on, I said, this man is rugby union. Brutal on the field. Perfect gentleman off it. And I just think that is what makes Jacques Berger someone that everybody loves.
I'm gonna reminisce about the first time that we met Jacques. At BT Sport 2.5 years ago, and we got told that Jacques Berger was there, and we were in the presence of World Cup winner Lawrence Dallaglio, and we completely ignored Dallaglio. I think he was actually a bit upset, yeah, because we were just like,
Jacques Berger's here now in his here.
We were just like grouped round him like kind of starstruck schoolgirls almost.
Yeah.
Well, as this is probably towards the end of the podcast now, I've got a small appeal to make, if you boys don't mind.
Go on.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately this week, my long relationship with only my second ever club has come to a terminal end. Oh. It's finished. I'm no longer with Broughton Park in any capacity whatsoever. So in the same
way, Jake, do you want to go into the ins and outs of why?
I don't mind. Do you want me to go into the ins and outs? I can do that. I mean, what have we got? We've got half an hour. You boys got half an hour.
Maybe give us the short answer then.
Or maybe
I've got a dinner appointment to get to. I'm going for tapas in a minute.
Nice. Very nice. Well, maybe tease it and people can have a little guess on a tweet at Rugby Podcast.
Yeah, well, I
suggest
suppose
what they think is the reason why you're not playing there anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the condensed sort of edited version is a committee, a bunch of backstabbing, cowardly Judases. But I don't want to elaborate, and I don't want to throw anyone else underneath the bus. So. As such, I will no longer be there. And in the same way that we did Phil's, fan free agency not so long ago.
Yeah.
I'm going to be needing a new club, but not just a new club to support. I'm going to need a new club to actually play at. So if you want to employ JB in any capacity, from water carrier to, and by the way, just spoke about myself in the third person, so I'm not sure I'm going to get that much interest. From water carrier to director of rugby to groundsman, send us some emails, we'll read them out, and we'll see if we can get something going throughout the off-season.
JB, to tight head prop slash winger.
I can play wing, back row or centre. You can have me in any of those positions.
And you're equally qualified, be it wing, back row, centre, water boy or director of rugby.
Or groundsman.
Or tea boy.
Or I make a mean cup of tea.
A superb cup of tea.
So if you've got a job for me, please let me know. Send us a tweet, send us an email. We'll read out your emails and we'll see if I can get myself some kind of job for next season.
If you were making the post-match meal, your cooking is really, really quite good. So even
Thank
if you,
you
were
too.
Making the meal in the kitchens, I'd be game on. But you'd be well. You have got your social secretary for a club. Oh my God, the kangaroo courts would be incredible.
My court sessions are renowned, to be fair.
You are the rugby club version of who's a total utility player on the field?
Chris Wiles.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is there anyone in the
forwards? You are Chris Wiles, but in terms of a whole rugby club.
Yeah.
Radiki Samo.
Radiki Samo. That's the one that I want. A really bad Radiki Samo.
She makes a mean cup of tea.
Yeah.
JB needs a cute. No, let's find JB. This is like. You know, you've got the Battersea Dogs Home.
Maybe you'll do a charity appeal advert for me.
Yeah, I'll get one of those sorted, JB, for next week.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Superb. Right,
Let's
I think
find JB a new home.
I think that we're done here, boys.
I'm done. I've got a dinner reservation. I'm going out now, so I'll see you later.
Right, well, you can log off then. We'll see you later, Tim.
What's cheers in Spanish? I've only just arrived. So what's cheers in Spanish?
No idea.
Yamas in Greek, isn't it?
And go with yamas. Yeah. They're all Europeans over there, mate.
All right, nice one, boys. See you next time.
Cheers, Tim.
Cheers, Tim.
In a bit.
Bye.
Cool. Well, that's the end of Tim. Right, I'll see you. Before I go, I should say that you can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us, most importantly, on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast, or me, at Jay Beardmore. And I think that's it. So I'll see you next week, Tim. Phil.
I'm glad you know who I am. And there's no games next week, unless you count Top 14 and Super Rugby, which we don't generally do a preview of.
We might do something, but we'll do something next week, definitely, for the international previews.
And what an international lineup it is. There are, I'm counting them now, 7 fixtures next weekend, 7 international fixtures. Mm. So, very...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Interesting. So next week will be a good pod.
Excellent. All right, mate. I'll see you next week.